You can't handle the truth.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Get away from her, you bitch!
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
To infinity and beyond!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the Samuel Emanuel Movie Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Reimer.
And I'm Manny Manuel.
It's Real Talk, number 16 today. We got some fun stuff on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Quick word. I've been battling a little bit of sickness all week, so I'm going to try not to cough right in the listeners' ears.
That's fair.
But if I sound a little, I don't know, under the weather at any point, you'll know why.
I totally understand. I actually forgot to do this in the rundown. Big thank you to Jordan.
Oh, yeah. My God. We always forget to do
that. We take her for granted.
Yes, absolutely. It's like she really is just like honorary co-host at this point.
Pretty much.
She's hosting at not too dissimilar a rate from myself.
But yeah, I actually forgot to put it in my show notes until we literally sat down and I'm like, I was just thinking
about...
To
be fair, I like to think we're equally forgettable. Equally for... what's the word I'm looking for? Not forgettable, but forgetful.
Yes, forgetful.
How wow. Ironic a word to forget.
Wow. This is going to be a long night.
I like to think we're equally forgetful about all of our PFGs.
Yes.
Not just Jordan.
But yes. But Jordan, big thank you. And I just want to give her a shout out. Incredibly great review.
Oh, man.
Of Contact that we literally just read
mere
minutes
That's
ago.
That's not the episode that she was on, which was a fun episode. But yeah, we just got onto... We were just about to hit record, and Jordan put her review of Contact in the group chat, and happy that she liked it. I'm 0% shocked that it's a movie that she liked.
I was unsure. I honestly didn't know.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't know. You obviously know her better than I do.
Yeah.
And I was very excited that she was sneaking this one in before things were needed,
mm-hmm.
before the list was needed, and seeing her rapturous review of it just filled me with joy because
very
it was
rapturous.
A movie I love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm excited for her to listen to the... our review of it as well.
She arguably should have hopped on that episode and and not the episode that she actually did go on, which was The Postman. Which, you can listen to it if you want to see what we thought of it, but it did win the Razzie for Worst Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Whether deserve it or not, you know, you can go back and listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't reveal my thoughts on it then.
My thoughts are approximately somewhere in there.
That being said, again, big thank you to Jordan for stepping in last week. We had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to our weekly question, there's three this week. And as always, as promised, and I will continue to do so for as long as it is viable to do so, if you answer our weekly question, I will read it on air. Even if you answer older questions, as long as I see them, there might be some that are so far back if you answer them that I don't get the notification. But we had an older question answered by none other than Wes. And for purely selfish reasons, I'm actually reading his answer online. So the question that Wes answered, he will forever be known as Little Baby Wes. What was the first movie you bought yourself? And Wes's answer warmed my heart.
Perks of Being a Wallflower?
No.
Oh, damn.
No. Wes's first movie he ever bought was Seven. On Manny's recommendation.
Oh, let's go. That's awesome.
Yeah, that makes... I had no idea.
That's late in the game, but I guess Wes is younger than both of us.
Yeah.
And did not grow up in the era of physical media.
True.
I mean, I only have, I think, like maybe 4 years on Wes, something like that. But even those 4 years are pretty crucial.
Yes.
In terms of what kind of media we were consuming.
Yeah. But yeah, that made me really happy and proud and excited. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to read that answer. But yeah, thank you, Wes. The next question is one we answered, you and I answered on here a couple weeks ago on our My Best Friend's Wedding mm-hmm. episode. And it was one I was kind of really, I really wanted to get a female perspective. And the question is, do Michael and Jules remain friends after the end of this movie? And I got four replies, all female. The first one's from Mushhead herself. Her reply, 100%, although she doesn't deserve him. But that's what's so beautiful about this movie, his and Kimmy's unwavering kindness and love.
That's a great answer from Mushhead.
Yeah.
I think she's incorrect, but yeah, but I respect the opinion very much so. I love the take.
The next one is from a longtime friend of mine named Tasha. And her answer is, being that this is one of my favorite movies, I've pondered this for years. My guess is they do, but not like it used to be. Maybe the occasional text here and there for birthdays. I feel like they had their chance, and that's all they have left. Now, I then asked, let's do it this. We'll do it this way. So, another friend of mine, Jody, she agreed with Tasha's response. So she too thinks that they will remain friends. And the last one is from another friend named Kendra. And her response, I think they have a break, and then when Jules meets someone, they become close again. Mm-hmm. But it's not really the same, since they don't live in the same town, but maybe make time to visit each other once a year and go for dinner and drinks. Now, I followed up their responses with, if you were Kimmy, would you allow Michael and Jules to be friends?
That's a tough question.
All right.
Hard hitting.
Tasha's response, honestly, yes, I would. I think that Kimmy and Michael have a strong enough bond. He did choose her, and Jules understands that. Jules and Michael also have a special bond that I think can't be broken, just not as strong as it once was. Jody's response is, you don't own people. You should do what you want, but yeah, I don't know.
Hmm. That's a strong answer to start, and then the yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you feel like it's a, I don't know, maybe, well, there's some uncertainty there, let's say.
Yeah, yeah. And Kendra's response, yes, because Michael had the opportunity to choose Jules and didn't. Kimmy is creme brulee. He chose her, and the biggest mistake would be to try to control him.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay. I really appreciate those answers. I won't lie. They are the exact opposite responses I was expecting.
Fully expecting at least one, like, that is a boundary being crossed.
Yeah.
I think Jules has proven herself to be a bad person who is not above meddling in your relationship. And
for her own selfish
and
needs.
Setting a boundary there, like, listen, I fully agree that controlling people is not a good way to allow a relationship to blossom.
Yes.
But there's a difference between controlling people and setting a boundary. Mm-hmm. Saying that this person actively tried to break us apart so that she could be with you is not controlling.
I agree.
I don't think.
I agree.
I disagree a little bit.
I'm going to respectfully disagree. I won't lie. It warms my heart that these three friends of mine have such an open and kind heart.
Yeah.
I do not. If a female friend of mine tried to do this to me, that friendship is over.
Yeah.
Over. It's like, not even the breaking. She almost got me fired from my job.
Yeah. Like, she does so much fucked up stuff. I can see that answer. I can see those answers from their perspective, like, you know, coming from people who are fans of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And fans of those characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the real world, these Jules in particular is a monster.
Yeah.
I think she's a truly horrible person. And if somebody like that tried to break up my relationship for their own gain and tried to get me fired for their own gain, I think, let's say it would be a point of contention if my partner still wanted to remain friends with them.
Oh, you're putting yourself in Kimmy's perspective.
Well, either or, really.
Okay.
Like, whether it's Michael's... I'm not saying Kimmy should put her foot down like it's her or me or something like that. Like, you can't talk to her anymore. I think that is a bridge too far.
Yeah, ultimatums are...
Yeah, that is bad.
I'm
not in favor of that. But I don't see how Michael, as a good partner, can continue to keep this person in his life. I think it's unfair to Kimmy.
I 100% agree.
I think it's unfair to Kimmy for him to want to keep, and I don't know why he would want to keep her in his life, is the other part.
Yeah. Wow.
Breaking toxic relationships and toxic friendships is a skill that you develop in life. I've not always been great at it. I hope I am getting better at it. And it's easy to do on behalf of other people, especially fictional people.
But, I'm very good at it.
But that is a toxic person.
I'm very good at it.
That is a toxic person.
I'm usually the toxic friend.
Yeah, that's how you got so good at identifying them.
We can smell our own.
Yeah. Takes one to know one.
It really does. Yeah, it really does. Okay. Big.
I appreciate all the perspectives.
I do.
I very much appreciate the responses.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I did shout them out on Facebook, letting them know that I would be reading their responses. Maybe I'll let them know what episode it is and they can decide to listen and then yell at me or whatever. But big thank you to my friends. And the last weekly question was in response to last week's Letterboxd rundown, Fresh Start Movies. And Wes gave an answer. And it's I'm pretty sure it's one you're not going to like. A Fresh Start movie that he loves is a movie that made that list.
Silver Linings Playbook.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Fair enough, man.
So I did. You did mention a couple last week, but I thought this might be a chance to go over one or two that you maybe thought of in the time since.
Yeah, we mentioned a bunch on air, including a number that made my top 20 of all time, like The Town, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and Good Will Hunting can all be considered various degrees of a Fresh Start movie. I also mentioned Unforgiven, which is another really good one. The two that that came to mind, I don't have in as high esteem of those movies, but are both movies I very much enjoy and I think fit the bill. One is Begin Again. With Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo.
Nice.
And the other one, I don't think you like as much as me, but still at least enjoyed it. And that's The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
I don't like it.
I can't remember if that made the list last week or not, but
there's no way.
Yeah,
that,
I don't
think that movie's a piece of shit.
A piece of shit that you gave 3 stars to.
I did?
Yeah, you gave it 3.
That's fucking ridiculous.
Promise you did.
I must have been drunk.
Yeah, it must have been.
That was a many movie pick, right?
Yeah, I picked it for the club.
Yeah, why?
I really like that movie.
I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but like, for me, the first answer I'm going to give is very similar to like the Good Will Hunting ones, where they're getting a fresh start at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. If I'm thinking of a fresh start movie, I think the movie should be about their fresh start, not them getting to their fresh start.
Yeah, I see.
So it's not like I'm not going to really argue over it because the Letterboxd rundown isn't that specific. So we might have mentioned it last week, but it kind of just came to mind. So one similar to where their fresh start is at the end, and it would be a complete fresh start, The Game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah. But then a movie that I really love, and more I watch it, the more I realize that this movie is going to – it's going to be one of my go-to comfort movies. It's also going to be one of those movies that I can just kind of put on the background. And it's a fresh start movie, Chef. Hmm. Absolutely love that movie.
I haven't seen Chef.
No?
Sorry.
It is just delightful. Absolutely delightful. Yeah, big fan. Big fan. So those are the ones I wanted to give a shout out to. I love the answer. Thank you, Wes, for taking the time to answer the question. Like I said, I will always read answers on air as long as I catch them. So if you guys go back and listen to older episodes and answer the question, I might not see the responses, but I will try my best. Moving on to what we've been watching, Sam has been a busy boy.
Yeah, I actually had time to watch the movies this week.
Yeah.
Which is always fun.
It is fun. Sam, what have you got for me?
All right. Don't ask me what inspired me to put this one on, but needed something fun one night, and lo and behold, Emma and I selected Ocean's 11.
Fuck yeah, I saw that. It was so fucking heavy.
Danny Ocean and his 10 accomplices plan to rob 3 Las Vegas casinos simultaneously. George Clooney and Brad Pitt have unbelievable chemistry in this movie.
Unbelievable.
First of all, just if you take a single frame of those two men together, it might be the most the single most attractive framing of any two people who have ever been on screen together. 2001 Brad Pitt and George Clooney is a sight to behold. And yeah, their chemistry is really good together. And there's a couple of moments that I remember laughing about. We did do an episode on it a long time ago. Manny, do you have the number on it?
Number 70.
Number 70, which is forever ago. We're creeping up on 300 now. Yeah. So that's some years
ago. August 29th, 2019.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. So we did do an episode on it. And there's a couple of scenes that I remember discussing and giggling about back then, and I giggled about them this time. Like, the moment where they've got 10 members, and Danny goes, that's good. 10's a good number. And Brad Pitt just remains silent. Doesn't even look at him. Doesn't make a face. Doesn't acknowledge it.
He's got his head down on the bar. I think it's a bar.
Yeah. But they just know each other so well. They've been working together for so long that Danny just goes, wait, you don't think that's enough? You think we need one more? You think we need one more, don't you? Okay, we'll get one more.
I love that. It's so good.
And I'm just chuckling the entire time. Like, that's so silly, but I totally buy that as two people who have worked together for so long that they just have this shorthand, this unspoken thing. It's super funny. Like the first act of the movie is basically the assembling the crew. And then
the team.
Really not even the first act. It's like the first half. First half of the movie is assembling the team. Second half is pulling off the job. And this is the blueprint for the heist movie. Like I honestly feel like heist movies haven't been this good since 2001. They just don't make them like this anymore because this is the perfect heist movie.
It is.
It's the perfect version of what it is. It's not to say it's like my favorite movie of all time or anything. It is just relentless fun. It's just fantastically paced, gets going right away, and doesn't stop for the entire runtime. There's always something going on screen, and it will keep your fucking attention the entire time. Heist movies can sometimes want to get convoluted, which they think is a shorthand for being smart. Like, the less you understand how the heist went down, the smarter the people actually are. I don't find that with Ocean's 11. I think it's just the right... The plan is just the right amount of complex where you can still get it and go like, oh, that's pretty good. There's a little bit of suspension of disbelief, as of course there is.
There's everything.
Yeah, but I think the plan is really well executed and really well written. Something that I wrote, I think, in the group chat is that I really respect that this is a heist movie with very little gunplay in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot. I do love a good movie like The Town, where we're just robbing a bank at gunpoint. That has its place in the world. But I love that we're just outsmarting the casinos in this. That's all that we're doing. We're just outsmarting the casinos. We're figuring out how to get in and out with their money, with nobody dying. It's just super fun.
Yep.
Yeah. I gave Ocean's 11 a 4.
You got a 4 again?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a 5 for me.
Yeah.
I fucking love this movie. There's so many parts, so many characters I absolutely adore, but I won't lie, the more often I watch it, let's just say the scene outside the Bellagio, the scene outside the Bellagio with the water fountain, with I believe the song is Claire de Lune, if I'm not mistaken.
You're correct.
Almost brings me to tears.
Yeah,
it is fucking beautiful, beautiful. I love this movie. I cannot heap enough praise on this film. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you watched it. I'm so glad you had a good time again. Yeah, and yeah, the chemistry between Clooney and Pitt is arguably some of the best chemistry on screen in recent memory.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons this doesn't get a 5, I don't think there's necessarily anything that's very weak about it. If there is a part that's not as strong as the others, it's probably the George Clooney, Julia Roberts stuff. I'm not as interested in that. It does give the heist a bit of a personal stake to it, mm-hmm. which is nice, and I think that's why it's included in the movie. But I can't get into it too much without going into spoilers, but the specifics of what goes down between them as the movie goes along just isn't as interesting to me as the actual heist.
It's fair.
So that's that. That's Ocean's 11.
Wicked.
Very good heist movie if anybody's looking for just 2 hours of solid fun. Okay. With some 1997s glaring as omissions that I haven't gone back to rewatch in some times, I decided to give Hercules a try.
Oh, shit.
From 1997. Let me pull up Hercules. Here we go. The son of Zeus and Hera is stripped of his immortality as an infant and must become a true hero in order to reclaim it. My Letterboxd review of this was simply, this is a lot hornier than I remember it being. There's a lot of sexual innuendo and sexuality and butts and references to Hercules' pecs and fangirls raging about how good he looks. There's a lot of that sort of stuff going on. So 90s Disney, I'm not sure exactly what it was they were trying to go for in that. That aspect struck me as a little bit weird this okay. time around.
Yep.
So I guess I should at least mention that my history with Hercules, this is not a movie I particularly grew up with. I discovered this probably in my teens-ish.
Okay.
Early teens, let's say. Like all right. 13, 14. And began to like it. This is probably like my third watch overall. Something like that.
Okay.
I will agree with what you said about Hercules last time, which is that Hades / James Woods is the highlight of the movie. He is exceptionally funny.
Unbelievable.
So charismatic. Does the menacing thing well. Does the comedic thing well. Is doing everything that he needs to. I, for the most part, do enjoy Hercules. It's a tight movie at an hour and a half. It's just a kind of a simple hero's journey. I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with the writing. Like I said, some of the comedy is a little bit of a head-scratching at times. But between James Woods as Hades and between the music, which I think is supremely underrated, actually, in the Disney canon, in particular the song Zero to Hero, I love.
Okay.
I've always loved that song. Between those things and... And a couple of good fight scenes in particular. I always remember the Hydra scene. That's always stuck out to me. And then, we also have Danny DeVito in a supporting role, who mm-hmm. I think is mostly pretty funny. Again, when his stuff starts getting a little bit more into the sexual realm, you kind of find yourself wondering what exactly Disney's going for in these kids' movies. But I laughed enough. I enjoyed it enough. And I bopped along to the music enough. I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I would, unfortunately. I think this is one that just hasn't aged particularly well. I still gave it a 3 out of 5. Previously, it would have been a 4. And previously, I think I had it like 4th or 5th in my top 10 of 1997. But it'll have fallen partially due to the fact that I don't hold this movie in as high of esteem, and partially due to the fact that I've just watched a lot more 97 movies.
That's fair.
Since this. So, yeah, do you have anything you want to add about Hercules?
Piece of shit.
It's not. I really don't think this is a piece of shit movie. I can see why it's not like the most popular Disney movie from the 90s, because there are so many better ones. There really are. But I still enjoy this one.
It's not a piece of shit. I gave it a 2. But in all honesty, it got a 2 because of James Woods. And on the rewatch for this, and DeVito helped, I kind of... Also, I don't know who... I know that Bobcat Goldthwait is one of the demons. I can't remember who the other one is.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
Though I found those two a little bit more enjoyable. But yeah, this was never, ever touching a 3. I just found this to be almost a chore to sit through.
Matt Frewer? Does that
okay.
sound right?
Yep, sounds good. Spoiler alert, I'm sitting at 67 films with... I think at last count, I have 8 that I am desperately trying to get done before next week. So
it's down to the wire.
It
That's
is.
Not like you.
I know.
Yeah.
I know, dude. I'm not happy with myself.
Busy guy.
Yeah. So I have tomorrow night free. I'm praying nobody needs my attention tomorrow. So I should be able to handle. I should be able to hammer out 3. And then I don't have my daughter on Sunday, and I have ball game. I do have some stuff to do in the morning, so if I wake up early, I can get it done. Then I've got Sunday, and I can probably hang on to another 3. So I should be able to get all of them done. The one I really wish I had the time for, it's the one I'm going to put off the longest, is a rewatch of Titanic. Oh, yeah. I really want to rewatch it desperately because I do love that movie. But if that's the one I can't get out, I can't get in, it's because it's 3 hours. So I need to get the other ones.
And you've seen it a good amount of times.
I've seen it 10 to 15.
Yeah.
Easily, if not more.
So as far as keeping it fresh in mind, it's probably one of the ones you can...
Yeah.
You could skip.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a couple of, like, L.A. Confidential is one of those movies as well. I've been saving it.
That's 2.5 hours as well, right?
Yeah. So, again, that's one. There's a couple that I really... Like, I think there's 2... Hold on, I actually can just fucking look at it. I need to get Wag the Dog in. I need to get the Apostle, and I'm going to try and get Mrs. Brown, and then I have
all the major 6.
Yeah. I've got all the major 6. Wow. So that I'll feel pretty good about that.
Honestly, if I can get in a rewatch of Good Will Hunting before we do our year in review, I'll be fine.
I did that last night.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Are you going to be talking about it?
No.
Okay.
We've covered it.
Yeah,
ad nauseum.
Yeah, and we've talked about it a few times.
Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah. There's nothing.
It's been 4.5 years. It's been since our episode since I've watched it.
What?
Yeah, That's the last time I watched that movie.
Holy shitballs.
And I have not logged Inglourious Basterds on Letterboxd.
That's so fucked up.
I know.
That's crazy. So fucked up.
Yeah. I'm gonna try to get both of those, but in particular Good Will Hunting because it's 97.
I did get off on topic. 67 films in 1997. Hercules is sitting at 41.
Yeah, so it's like not... It's like maybe bottom third, but... actually, that's... no, it's not even quite bottom third. Yeah, it's middle third, so...
Yeah. Trust me, there's been some bad fucking movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe that. Yeah, I saw The Postman.
Yeah. I want... Oh, I actually have The Postman below Hercules.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be.
That's correct.
The more I think about The Postman, I want to keep lifting it.
Then do it, man. If you like it, just like
I
like
don't.
It.
I just, I don't know why. I think it's just my it's my love of Costner.
Yeah, that's exactly
it's,
what it is.
It's what it is. I'm trying to defend my boy.
Yeah.
But we all have stinkers.
Yeah.
Moving on. Hercules 3. Yeah.
Is that a sequel to Everybody Poops? We all have stinkers?
I guess, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, 1997 continues on.
Nice, I'm loving this.
I tackled another one that I hadn't watched in a long time. I've seen it probably 5 or 6 times prior to this. And I was just looking at it. Emma had never seen it before. It's a quick hour and a half, and it's good fun. I was like, let's watch Men in Black.
Fuck yeah!
So... Men in Black, James, a New York City cop, is hired by Agent K of a secret government agency that monitors extraterrestrial life on Earth. Sorry, my IMDb synopsis is reloading. Bear with me. Extraterrestrial life on Earth. Together, they must recover an item that has been stolen by an intergalactic villain. That's a pretty straightforward plot synopsis. Nothing to write home about. Sounds like a pretty basic sci-fi comedy, but much like I was saying about Ocean's 11, how it was the blueprint of heist movies to come, this was the blueprint of a whole different kind of movie. Like the sci-fi action comedy, this is like the best version of it. This still holds up so very well. I imagine back in 97, this was probably a bit of a surprise that this did as well as it did.
No.
Although Will Smith at this point is like post-Independence Day. So starting to blow up.
Independence,
Bad Boys.
Independence Day is what blew him up.
Mm-hmm.
This solidified it.
Yeah,
that's what it was. Like we're riding high on the Willy train.
Yeah, and you know what? I remember when watching a movie with Will Smith in it made me feel good, and it didn't make me feel bad about feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was genuinely filled with such warmth. Watching this movie, remembering what a star he was, even though, again, I wasn't really around for 97. I was 1 year old when this came out. So it's not like I was waxing nostalgic for the days that he was a star. I just mean, like, watching 90s Will Smith is just a truly special thing when he's on. It's really special watching, like, a through-and-through movie star.
Yep.
Just doing an action movie and having a ton of fun. You can tell that both him and Tommy Lee Jones are having a fucking blast in this movie.
100%.
Which isn't always easy, but when you have a combination of practical and special effects, as this movie does, or I guess I should say a combination of practical effects and CGI, as this movie does, it's a lot easier to get invested into the world and to have that kind of fun. And you can definitely get that in Will Smith's performance in particular. But man, Tommy Lee Jones was the perfect fit for Agent K. I think he's so incredibly well cast. He's not even really a traditional straight man in the sense that he's reacting to the weird things that Will Smith is doing. If anything, Will Smith is playing more of the traditional straight man role because he's reacting to all these alien stuff, this alien technology, these alien species that he's seeing for the first time. And Tommy Lee Jones is the one who's acting like it's all perfectly normal.
It's TLJ's non-reactions that make him funny.
Yeah, one of the biggest laughs that I get in the movie is when they pull over the alien who's fleeing the city and his wife is giving birth to like a giant squid in the back seat and Will Smith gets tossed around by it. He gets covered in goop. He delivers like an alien squid baby and it's his first day on the job. And they get back into the car and Tommy Lee Jones says with a straight face, "Okay, did anything about that seem unusual to you?"
Yes.
And Will Smith's just like slow look over to him is just comedic gold for me. That it's moments like that where Agent K's earnestness that he just does not understand that something weird is happening around him, and Agent J's how baffled he is by every single moment that happens is just a recipe for comic gold. So I had a great laugh the entire time. This is not a groundbreaking, or I shouldn't say it like that. This is not like a screenwriting masterclass or anything like that. It's a pretty basic buddy cop comedy with sci-fi guns and aliens.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what this is, and it's a really fun version of what it is. So it does get a 4 out of 5 for me. I don't know if you have anything you want to add on it.
They can listen to the episode and hear my thoughts on Men in Black.
Yeah, which I was not on.
I'm so sad because you missed some comedy gold from Mushy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did mention that and that I should listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really happy to get to Men in Black again because I wasn't sure that I did. And I think before the last 97 watch, I didn't watch it either.
That is true.
It was time that I did.
Yep.
All right. I'm very curious to talk about this one, actually.
Interesting.
Mainly because as I was watching this, I was like, I've either had somebody talk to me about this movie or I've heard something about this movie because some of the beats were showing up as kind of familiar. I was getting some deja vu. And I realized I had heard you, let's say, complain about the movie a little bit.
Oh, interesting.
I watched I Like Movies from, I think it's a 2022.
Oh.
So, I Like Movies. Lawrence Queller, a socially inept 17-year-old cinephile, gets a job at a video store where he forms a complicated friendship with his older female manager. Oh, sorry, that cough is getting to me a little bit. So, Manny, this was striking me as something that you had definitely talked to me about when I was probably 10 to 20 minutes in. There was a line he said somewhere along the way about how he wanted to be a filmmaker, the main character does, this mm-hmm. Lawrence. He wanted to be a filmmaker, but he didn't want to be a Canadian filmmaker. And I was like, I've heard of this. Somebody said that to me, and I'm pretty sure it was you.
Yep.
I just got to give a shout out off the bat to Isaiah Lettinen, who plays Lawrence, who gives a masterful performance. I thought it was a fantastic performance as somebody who is a sociopathic, narcissistic, kind of monster child. He walks on people around him. He disrespects his mother time and time again, disrespects his friends, doesn't care about their likes, their dislikes, imparts upon them what he wants to do all the time. He's demanding and just generally selfish. And that's in the first like 15 minutes of the movie, basically. And he only basically gets worse from there. And he gets hired at a video store. This, in a lot of ways, there's a lot of movies that this reminded me of. Clerks is definitely one of them. That sort of buddy hangout, first job, low budget shop sort of vibe with all the regulars and all the staff that barely gives a shit. Kind of has that Clerks or Empire Records feel to it.
Have you seen Empire Records?
Yes, I have.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we talked about that maybe one time, but anyway, I'll get into that later. But regardless of all of that, I found myself really rooting for Lawrence because the writer director Chandler Levac, who I believe this is her feature debut, she does just a good enough job of giving you reasons to understand Lawrence and sympathize with him. It just gives you just enough breadcrumbs of his history, of his upbringing, to make you sympathize with him and go, oh, that's the way, that's why you're the way that you are. And you begin to feel bad for him in the same way that his boss, begins to feel bad for him. Gotta give a shout out to her as well, by the way. I'm trying to pull up the cast list at the same time, but I believe that it is Romina DeUgo as Alana.
Mm-hmm.
Also gives a great performance as the manager of this video rental chain.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of the performances, what I really liked about I Like Movies is the pop culture references that are shouted out, much like Clerks, although it's less of a shout out. It feels like it's very much shouting out these pop culture references to give you a sense of the area and give you a sense of the era. So what I mean by that is, this takes place in Burlington, Ontario. So things like Wendy's Frosties are shouted out. Things like Cineplex is shouted out. It takes place in the early 2000s, so Shrek is shouted out a couple of times. I thought the sprinkling of pop culture references did a good job of setting the scene in this one. This is at times very funny. This is at times incredibly dark and incredibly sad. And at times Lawrence is a very difficult person to root for. I found myself very moved by this movie. I did give it a 4 out of 5. I would be interested, Manny, if you have anything you want to add about this one.
This is one of the most unlikable lead characters in a movie I've seen in a long time.
Since my best friend's wedding.
No, worse. I think he's worse than her. Again, we can smell our own. So I did not find an inkling of... I understand the parts you're referring. Mm. I didn't get the... It didn't garner the reaction to me towards any sympathy towards him. And it's because I found him so completely unlikable that I could not fully enjoy the movie. And we're talking... And again, it's all about... It's all about the kind of movie that you're watching. Whereas, like, I hate to even use this example because we all know how I feel about but like the movie The Joker is about an insane man, and but I know what that movie's about. So this movie, the title alone, I was like, I like movies. And it's about a kid who gets a job in a video store. That was like my dream job when I was growing up. But he is so repugnant as a person. I could not get into the movie because I kept waiting for him to be able to redeem himself at some point, and he never does. Mm. He is just a complete, utter piece of shit. The way he treats his mother was appalling to me. Appalling. The way he treats his friends was disgusting. And I just couldn't forgive him as a person, as a character, for doing that. So it's not that I'm holding it against the movie in regards to that. The movie is well made. Everything he said is right. But I don't think I ever want to watch it again because I hate Lawrence so much. And it hurts me. It just hurts me that character exists. It's a really well-made movie. I'm hoping Chandler continues to make films. And yeah, Romina Duago, however you want to pronounce the name. I apologize, Romina, if you're listening. I might have even mispronounced your first name, so I have no idea. But she's great. Absolutely fantastic. And
she has a really great monologue about why she hates movies.
Yep.
She has a really good monologue.
That is the highlight of the film. Mm-hmm. And it is a really good movie that is 100% worth checking out. It gets the score is in relative to my entertainment factor, and I just fucking hate Lawrence. I fucking hate him.
I think I ultimately found him redeemable, especially in the last 10% of the movie. He certainly becomes more of a redeemable character. I also think that part of the reason why the writing is so realistic and so good to me is that, while he does treat so many people like garbage, a Hollywood movie would have everything be happy and hunky-dory at the end. But, I mean, I guess mild spoiler, but not really, because I'm going to say it as generally as possible. Not everybody comes back.
No.
Like, there are some friendships and some relationships that just become severed in this movie because of who he is fundamentally as a person. Speaking of cutting toxic people out of your life, a number of people in this movie just go like, you know what? Fuck this kid.
Yeah.
Like, I'm tired of feeling bad for this kid and letting him walk all over me as a result.
Yeah.
I need to remove his negativity from my life. And they do. And I respect them for that.
As do I.
That being said, I think he does continue to improve and does prove that even somebody as reprehensible as himself can make steps day in and day out to become a better person. So for that reason, it does get a 4 from me.
Nice. I'm so glad you liked it.
All right, from the darkest movie that I watched, and by the way, this was, I was not expecting that to be a dark movie, really. Yeah.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah, it's very, very strange. From the darkest movie that I watched to the pinkest.
It's not Barbie, though.
It's not Barbie.
This is the pinkest movie pre-Barbie.
Yeah. This is Legally Blonde from 2001. Elle Woods, a fashionable sorority queen, is dumped by her boyfriend. She decides to follow him to law school. While she is there, she figures out that there is more to her than just looks. I was convinced, having gone in, that I had seen this movie before. I hadn't. I was familiar with a small number of scenes. I was familiar with the bend and snap scene. And I think I had seen like maybe the very, very, very end, but I didn't even really think about that until it actually showed up.
Okay.
So for all intents and purposes, this was my first watch. And I wrote in my Letterboxd review something to the effect of, as a white boy who grew up in the suburbs, I was somewhat brainwashed into thinking that movies like this are not worthy of my time. This is a chick flick. Why would I, a man, Manny, or at the time that I was thinking that, probably like a 13, 14-year-old boy, why would I waste my time on something that looks like this?
Why would you watch such drivel?
Why would I watch such drivel? Manny, I owe an apology to Reese Witherspoon, to director Robert Luketich. Is that how you say that?
You did. You nailed it.
To a Writers American, Amanda Brown, Karen McCullough, and Kirsten Smith. I owe an apology to the Elle Woodses of the world who would go on to become lawyers because of this movie. I owe an apology to everybody who's a fan of Legally Blonde because this movie is a fucking banger. This movie I had so much fun with. Elle Woods is like the perfect movie protagonist. She is... I don't want to call it a response to Mean Girls because Mean Girls came out some years after this, but she's like she's the anti-Regina George. She's Regina George if she decided to not be a terrible person. I think that Elle Woods has everything that is likable in a protagonist. She's smart. She's driven. She's beautiful, obviously. She has a GPA just good enough to go to Harvard Law if she wants. But she's not written in such a way that she's perfect. She does have flaws. She's in love with somebody who she shouldn't be in love with at the beginning of the movie. She underestimates herself, and she's a little bit naive and maybe a little bit socially clueless, let's say. So what I love about the writing of her character is how perfectly her evolution goes. She learns step by step about what the real world is. Through being in Harvard Law, or more accurately, she learns how to survive in this world. She learns how to survive in the world that she finds herself in, for reasons that are well within her control. But she realizes along the way what she needs to do to survive. And one of the screenwriting tricks that a lot of people will do, and that I think is done in this movie, is they will give their protagonist... there will be a gap between what the protagonist wants and what the protagonist needs. And what Elle Woods thinks she needs is to get married, and to get married to this particular guy. And therefore, what she wants is to go to Harvard Law. But in that journey, she realizes that discrepancy. She realizes that what she actually needs is a little bit of independence and a fresh journey and a new challenge. And I had so much fun with her along the way, discovering... that growth. And there's a great scene where she even realizes it earlier in the runtime than I would have expected, where she flat out says to this man, she's like, I'm never gonna be good enough for you, am I? And it's like, actually fantastic acting by Reese Witherspoon, who's fantastic through the entire movie. There are so many twists and turns in this movie in only an hour and 36 minute runtime. I had a really good time with Legally Blonde. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I can say about it, other than that, it is laugh out loud funny, and that it has an insanely well written protagonist. It's an easy 4 out of 5. It was an absolute blast. Have you seen this one?
Yeah, I've seen it once.
Yeah.
In theaters.
Yeah. What really impressed me with this was the writing of the protagonist. I thought this was an insanely smartly written movie, a very tight hour 36.
What is this? 2004.
One.
2001.
Yeah. Two 2001s. I'm going to need to redo my list for that year.
So, I don't have much recollection in regards to the intricacies and the details of the film. But what I do remember is going into the theater with the exact mindset that you said at the beginning of your review of this movie.
This is going to be fucking stupid.
I'm like, this is going to be a fucking chick flick. Now, I like chick flicks. Yeah. I don't have a problem with it. But I went in going, this is going to be dumb. And please let it be okay. And it was more than okay. It was highly entertaining. I personally am not a fan of Reese Witherspoon, for reasons I don't need to get into. So it takes a little extra effort on her part to win me over.
And she easily wins me over in this movie. She is absolutely delightful. She's Ted Lasso before Ted Lasso.
100%. That's a great way of putting it. Fuck.
Yeah. And it's a thoroughly enjoyable movie that I'm very excited to rewatch. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the nice thing is, having only seen it once, I know that once I start watching it, it's all going to come back to me, but I can't recollect any specific time or moments except for the bend and snap.
Yeah.
I'm excited to rewatch.
I love your comparison to Ted Lasso, because that is exactly it. It is her optimism and her constant belief in herself, her unwavering belief in herself that she can do this, which again borders on stupidity, but it's not stupidity. It's just like blind faith. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm a fashion student. I'm going to be able to get into Harvard Law, no problem. Oh, I got in. I'm going to be able to like do fine. I'm going to be able to become an excellent lawyer with no previous experience, no problem. It's that blind faith, which is, if it's misplaced, it's stupid. But because she just constantly rises to the occasion, it's just admirable. Mm-hmm. It's so good. And her optimism is so infectious, much like Ted Lasso.
Yep.
So yeah, I think that's an excellent comparison. Her just being nice to all the people around her all the time is also very Ted Lasso-like. There's a great scene where one of the, let's call him dorkier, one of the dorkier guys in her class who's been nice to her, she catches a couple of women making fun of him on campus. She comes across a couple of women going like, would any woman ever want to date you? You're a fucking loser. You're fat. You're whatever. And she, like, as she's walking past them, she hesitates for a second, turns around and smacks him across the face, and has a great moment where she's like, how dare you make love to me like that and never call me again? And starts absolutely hyping him up, and he slowly catches on as to what she's doing, and is like, oh yeah. And she convinces these women that that he's a total a Chad, as the kids are saying. Oh. a total Adonis. It was a funny little heartwarming moment. Anyway, I can go on about this movie. I had a really fun time with it. It is a 4 out of 5.
Sweet. Might be one we have to review then, I guess.
I think so, yeah.
Sweet.
I'm sure we would have people who would want to come on for this.
Most likely. Most likely. Look at you. Another collection of good movies.
Yeah. This was a good week. Even, I think I had 4 fours and a 3.
Yeah.
And even the 3 is formerly a 4.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I wish I could say the same.
Mm.
Just kidding. Unlike the last one where I watched a bunch of shit, I actually watched some good movies this week. So the first movie I watched was this round of the Many Movie Club, selected by Jordan. The movie is called American Animals. 4 young men mistake their lives for a movie and attempt one of the most audacious heists in U.S. history. I knew I was in for a good treat when, you know, when you watch a movie and it starts off based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
It says this is based on a true story. And what they do is they wipe out the based. This is a true story.
Nice. That's cool.
And one of the great things about this film is they intersperse, while you're watching the movie, real life interviews with the people that this movie's based on.
Oh, very cool.
And their family members. This movie is fantastic. Highly recommend this, Sam. I hope you can get a chance to squeeze this in. And if not, I tell you to please put it on your watch list.
Okay.
It is incredibly entertaining. Evan Peters and Barry Keoghan are fantastic in this. The movie is incredibly engaging and absolutely riveting, because you know that the movie is a true story. So you keep wondering how things play out, as you also get a bit of the when you can't trust the narrator,
unreliable narrator.
So they show you one person's perspective on what happened, and then you talk to the real person, and then they talk to another real person that was there, and then you watch his perspective of what happened. Mm. It's an incredibly well-made movie that, again, I think is truly heightened because it really happened. And it was
a lot of fun. I had a great time. I'm so glad Jordan picked this. This was not on my radar. I'd never even heard of this movie.
Yeah, I've never heard of this.
Highly recommend it. Easy 4 out of 5 for me.
Cool. Yeah, I have nothing to add, I don't think, other than that I did just add it to my watch list, and I'm very interested.
Good. The next up was a movie that I was very excited to knock off my 1997. It was the only film that was nominated for Best Director, but not Best Picture. It is The Sweet Hereafter by Canadian filmmaker Adam McGuigan. A bus crash in a small town brings a lawyer to defend the families, but he discovers everything isn't what it seems. If I'm not mistaken, this was filmed around a... Is that Spences Bridge?
Honestly, I'm not too sure.
Yeah, it's all around that area. And once you kind of know that...
You can see it.
Every time... Remember when we watched Wind River and I said, that looks like BC,
yeah,
right? You watch this, you're like, that's fucking BC.
Yeah. That's like here.
Yeah, that's like really fucking... And for
down
those
the road.
Yeah, that... Where this place is filmed is about a 2-hour drive from here, not even.
Yeah, Ashcroft is probably closer.
It's a little bit farther than Ashcroft. Right, okay. I know it's down that road.
Okay.
Anyways...
By the way, it does say on Wikipedia, it's listed as shot in British Columbia, Merritt and Spences Bridge.
Merritt and Spences Bridge. Okay. Yeah. This movie's unreal. Absolutely fucking unreal. A very young Sarah Pauli is in it.
Hmm.
And Oscar winner, Sarah Pauli.
Screenplay for Women Talking?
Yeah. This has Ian Holm playing the aforementioned lawyer. An actor I absolutely fucking love named Bruce Greenwood, playing one of the grieving fathers of this bus crash in a small town. It's not a spoiler alert. This bus crash kills a bunch of kids. And this lawyer comes into town attempting to conglomerate all these people together to file a large action lawsuit. This movie is unbelievably good, unbelievably dark, with some... truly great acting that was sadly overlooked by the Academy Awards. Ian Holm is magnificent. Bruce Greenwood is unbelievable. Sarah Pauli is fantastic. This movie is beautifully shot, beautifully put together. I can't heap enough praise. Seeing how small this film is and it garners almost no other recognition at the Academy Awards except for a director nod for Adam McGuigan is absolutely fucking delightful to me. It's one of the few times that the Academy actually does something right by recognizing a real fucking audacious talent. I love this movie despite its incredibly dark subject matter.
Yeah, this does not seem like a fun watch.
It's not as dark as what the plot implies. Obviously, it is about a bunch of kids that get killed, but mm-hmm. It's more about
the legal procedural.
No, it's not. That's the funny thing.
Yeah.
It's more about this lawyer who is trying to get these families to come together while also dealing with his own family issues. And then it's also about this small town trying to heal itself from this incredible tragedy. And because this occurs, lots of old secrets or secrets within the community start to come out. And it's all about just trying to keep yourself together and do what's best for your family and for the community. So while the subject matter is dark, it's not super dark. It's just, this isn't like a hugely uplifting movie, but it's not going to depress you to watch it. It has this fine balance. Spoiler, it's also not a feel good movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an incredibly well crafted, beautifully shot, excellently acted film that I'm so glad I finally got a chance to watch. Easy 4 out of 5 for me.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's another good pitch. I had never heard of this. Honestly, what it makes me think of is the recent crash, the Humboldt Broncos bus crash. It kind of sounds like similar subject matter to that sort of thing, I guess. But yeah, definitely piqued my attention. The movie that it makes me think of, I guess, is is more like an Aaron Brockovich, but that's probably wrong, because
very
that's,
wrong tones yeah. are completely different. Yeah. I understand exactly yeah. where you're going, trying to get everyone together. Mm-hmm. Aaron Brockovich is very uplifting.
Yeah,
this is not.
Yeah,
yeah, this is not. I want to do correct myself. It actually did have another Oscar nomination for screenplay.
Right.
So yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there. My apologies for forgetting the other Oscar nomination. This movie is absolutely fantastic.
Cool.
I'm so glad I got a chance to watch it.
Nice.
And the last film. Yet again, the next film in the John McTiernan filmography that I'm following along with the Blank Check podcast. I am a week behind them, but it's going to have to be on hold for a little bit as I try and knock out those 97s, and that's okay because, sadly, this is, from my understanding, his next film. So the film I watched was The Thomas Crown Affair, a movie I fucking love. From my understanding, it's his last good film. So it's all downhill from here. Now, his next two films, there's only three left. His next two films I haven't seen. And his last film is one I have that is not good. Hmm. But this film, The Thomas Crown Affair, a very rich and successful playboy amuses himself by stealing artwork, but may have met his match in a seductive detective. Now, that, my friends, is actually wrong. She is not a detective at all. She is an insurance agent. Hmm. She helps insurance companies make sure that they have to pay it out. She is not with law enforcement at all.
But she is an investigator.
She is an investigator. So, she is not involved with law enforcement.
Right.
She is 100% insurance. She's an insurance investigator. So the seductive detective in this film would have been Dennis Leary, who is a detective in this film. Hmm. But that made me laugh. Pierce Brosnan, Rene Russo. One of the many things I love about this film is, surprisingly, and it is all because this Pierce Brosnan was one of the producers on this film. He's the one that helped get this film made. We have an age-appropriate relationship.
Oh.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan at this time, around this time, probably would have been in his maybe late 40s, maybe 50s, probably not. Probably late 40s, mid to late 40s. Rene Russo, late 30s, early 40s probably. So they have an age-appropriate relationship. Absolutely delightful. Rene Russo, smoking fucking hot in this movie. Hmm. And that seductive detective, she is completely seductive, but not in a slutty way. It is the fucking absolute fucking confidence that she carries on herself that makes her hot as fuck. This movie is so much fun. The one thing I'll recommend to you, Sam, give this score a chance.
Yeah.
I love this score.
Okay.
Absolutely love this score. I'll tell you right now, it's a 1999 film. We'll be reviewing it. Since our 1999 slate is probably already, without finalizing it, over 20 films already.
Weesh.
Yeah, yeah. This is a movie I desperately want to review because I have such a great time with this movie. It is fun. It is a heist movie. It is an absolute blast. Full disclosure right here. No, you know what? I'm not going to disclose that. I'll let that go. I have a great time watching this movie. This is a movie that if I just want to put something on to sit down and enjoy and have a good time, this is exactly one of the movies that I always consider. I've always had a great time with this movie. I was super excited to rewatch it yet again. Easy slam dunk, 4 out of 5.
Yeah, I'll admit I've heard of this, but I've never really known what it's about or never really known much about it. Yeah, you've given me three movies that I feel like could all have gone on my watch list between American Animals, Sweet Hereafter, and Thomas Crown Affair.
Yeah. That wraps up what we've been watching.
Cool.
That wraps up this week's Real Talk. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, it helps increase the profile of our podcast, which we greatly appreciate. You can also listen to us on Spotify, and while you're there, give us a little rating. And since you're listening to us on Spotify, answer our weekly question. If you answer our weekly question, I promise to read your answer on air on a Real Talk episode. You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sam_Manny_movie. You can follow us on Facebook at the Samuel Manny Movie Podcast. You can email us at sammannymoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Letterboxd at Sam Reimer and Manny42, respectively. For Real Talk, I'm Manny Manuel.
Bend and snap. I'm Sam Reimer.
Adios.